going to meet our husbands in blank. We thanked him and promised to observe carefully all the directions he gave us. Fanny and I now talked by ourselves, low and quietly, in our little cabin. She told me of the suffering she had gone through in making her escape, and of her terrors while she was concealed in her mother's house. Above all, she dwelt on the agony of separation from all her children on that dreadful auction day. She could scarcely credit me when I told her of the place where I had passed nearly 7 years. "We have the same sorrows," said I. "No," replied she, "you are going to see your children soon, and there is no hope that I shall ever even hear from mine." The vessel was soon under way, but we made slow progress. The wind was against us. I should not have cared for this if we had been out of sight of the town, but until there were miles of water between us and our enemies, we were filled with constant apprehensions that the constables would come on board. Neither could I feel quite at ease with the captain and his men. I was an entire stranger to that class of people, and I had heard that sailors were rough and sometimes cruel. We were so completely in their power that if they were bad men, our situation would be dreadful. Now that the captain was paid for our passage, might he not be tempted to make more money by giving us up to those who claimed us as property? I was naturally of a confiding disposition, but slavery had made me suspicious of everybody. Fanny did not share my distrust of the captain or his men. Page 199. She said she was afraid at first, but she had been on board 3 days while the vessel lay in the dock, and nobody had betrayed her or treated her otherwise than kindly. The captain soon came to advise us to go on deck for fresh air. His friendly and respectful manner, combined with Fanny's testimony, reassured me, and we went with him. He placed us in a comfortable seat and occasionally entered into conversation. He told us he was a Southerner by birth and had spent the greater part of his life in the slave states, and that he had recently lost a brother who trained in slaves. But, said he, "it is a pitiable and degrading business, and I always felt ashamed to acknowledge my brother in connection with it." As we passed Snaky Swamp, he pointed to it and said, "There is a slave territory that defies all the laws." I thought of the terrible days I had spent there, and, though it was not called Dismal Swamp, it made me feel very dismal as I looked at it. I shall never forget that night. The balmy air of spring was so refreshing, and how shall I describe my sensations when we were fairly sailing on Chesapeake Bay? Oh, the beautiful sunshine, the exhilarating breeze, and I could enjoy them without fear or restraint. I had never realized what grand things air and sunlight are till I had been deprived of them. 10 days after we left land, we were approaching Philadelphia. The captain said we should arrive there in the night, but he thought we had better wait till morning and go on shore in broad daylight, as the best way to avoid suspicion. I replied, "You know best, but will you stay on board and protect us?" He saw that I was suspicious, and he said he was sorry, now that he had brought us to the end of our voyage, to find I had so little confidence in him. Ah, if he had ever been a slave, he would have known how difficult it was to trust a white man. He assured us that we might sleep through the night without fear, that he would take care we were not left unprotected. Be it said to the honor of this captain, Southerner as he was, that if Fanny and I had been white ladies and our passage lawfully engaged, he could not have treated us more respectfully. My intelligent friend, Peter, had rightly estimated the character of the man to whose honor he had entrusted us. Page 200. The next morning, I was on deck as soon as the day dawned. I called Fanny to see the sunrise for the first time in our lives on free soil, for such I then believed it to be. We watched the reddening sky and saw the great orb come up slowly out of the water, so as it seemed. Soon the waves began to sparkle and everything caught the beautiful glow. Before us lay the city of strangers. We looked at each other, and the eyes of both were moistened with tears. We had escaped from slavery, and we supposed ourselves to be safe from the hunters. But we were alone in the world, and we had left dear ties behind us, ties cruelly sundered by the demon slavery. Page 201. Starting chapter 31. Incidents in Philadelphia. I had heard that the poor slave had many friends at the North. I trusted we should find some of them. Meantime, we would take it for granted that all were friends till they proved to the contrary. I sought out the kind captain, thanked him for his attentions, and told him I should never cease to be grateful for the service he had rendered us. I gave him a message to the friends I had left at home, and he promised to deliver it. We were placed in a rowboat, and in about 15 minutes we landed on a wood wharf in Philadelphia. As I stood looking round, the friendly captain touched me on the shoulder and said, "There is a respectable-looking colored man behind you. I will speak to him about the New York trains and tell him you wish to go directly on." I thanked him and asked him to direct me to some shops where I could buy gloves and veils. He did so and said he would talk with the colored man till I returned. I made what haste I could. Constant exercise on board the vessel and frequent rubbing with salt water had nearly restored the use of my limbs. The noise of the great city confused me, but I found the shops and bought some double veils and gloves for Fanny and myself. The shopman told me they were so many levies. I had never heard the word before, but I did not tell him so. I thought if he knew I was a stranger, he might ask me where I came from. I gave him a gold piece, and when he returned the change, I counted it and found out how much a levy was. I made my way back to the wharf, where the captain introduced me to the colored man as the Reverend Jeremiah Durham, minister of Bethel Church. He took me by the hand as if I had been an old friend. He told us we were too late for the morning cars to New York and must wait until the evening or the next morning. Page 202. He invited me to go home with him, assuring me that his wife would give me a cordial welcome, and for my friend he would provide a home with one of his neighbors. I thanked him for so much kindness to strangers and told him if I must be detained, I should like to hunt up some people who formerly went from our part of the country. Mr. Durham insisted that I should dine with him, and then he would assist me in finding my friends. The sailors came to bid us goodbye. I shook their hearty hands with tears in my eyes. They had all been kind to us, and they had rendered us a greater service than they could possibly conceive of. I had never seen so large a city or been in contact with so many people in the streets. It seemed as if those who passed looked at us with an expression of curiosity. My face was so blistered and peeling, sitting on deck in wind and sunshine, that I thought they would not easily decide to what nation I belonged. Mrs. Durham met me with a kindly welcome without asking any questions. I was tired, and her friendly manner was a sweet refreshment. God bless her. I was sure that she had comforted many other weary hearts before I received her sympathy. She was surrounded by her husband and children in a home made sacred by protecting laws. I thought of my own children and sighed. After dinner, Mr. Durham went with me in quest of the friends I had spoken of. They went from my native town, and I anticipated much pleasure in looking on familiar faces. They were not at home, and we retraced our steps through streets delightfully clean. On the way, Mr. Durham observed that I had spoken to him of a daughter I expected to meet, that he was surprised, for I looked so young, he had taken me for a single woman. He was approaching a subject on which I was extremely sensitive. He would ask about my husband next, I thought, and if I answered him truly, what would he think of me? I told him I had two children, one in New York, the other in the South. He asked some further questions, and I frankly told him some of the most important events of my life. It was painful for me to do it, but I would not deceive him. If he was desirous of being my friend, I thought he ought to know how far I was worthy of it. Page 203. "Excuse me if I have tried your feelings," he said. "I did not question you from idle curiosity. I wanted to understand your situation in order to know whether I could be of any service to you or your little girl. Your straightforward answers do you credit, but don't answer everybody so openly. It might give some heartless people a pretext for treating you with contempt." That word, contempt, burned me like coals of fire. I replied, "God alone knows how I have suffered, and He, I trust, will forgive me. If I am permitted to have my children, I intend to be a good mother and to live in such a manner that people cannot treat me with contempt." "I respect your sentiments," said he. "Place your trust in God and be governed by good principles, and you will not fail to find friends." When we reached home, I went to my room, glad to shut out the world for a while. The words he had spoken made an indelible impression upon me. They brought up great shadows from the mournful past. In the midst of my meditations, I was startled by a knock at the door. Mrs. Durham entered, her face all beaming with kindness, to say that there was an anti-slavery friend downstairs who would like to see me. I overcame my dread of encountering strangers and went with her. Many questions were asked concerning my experiences and my escape from slavery, but I observed how careful they all were not to say anything that might wound my feelings. How gratifying this was can be fully understood only by those who have been accustomed to be treated as if they were not included within the pale of human beings. The anti-slavery friend had come to inquire into my plans and to offer assistance if needed. Fanny was comfortably established for the present with a friend of Mr. Durham. The Anti-Slavery Society agreed to pay her expenses to New York. The same was offered to me, but I declined to accept it, telling them that my grandmother had given me sufficient to pay my expenses to the end of my journey. We were urged to remain in Philadelphia a few days until some suitable escort could be found for us. I gladly accepted the proposition. for I had a dread of meeting slaveholders, or some dread also of railroads. I had never entered a railroad car in my life, and it seemed to me quite an important event. Page 204. That night I sought